This is Chris Martin, and me and my buddy Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. Kevin O'Everything, host an NBA podcast called The Mismatch. They call it The Mismatch because I'm awesome, and Kevin is a gigantic nerd.
No, that's not why at all, Chris. They call it The Mismatch because I have a brain, and you're a loudmouth bozo.
Good grief.
Anyway, listen to our amazing NBA podcast, The Mismatch.
Or don't. We really don't care. We're probably going to win a million awards either way.
Chris, we do care, so don't say that. Please subscribe and listen to The Mismatch only on Spotify.
Did you really call me a bozo?
It's the Ringer NBA show presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer NBA show. It's The Answer. I'm Chris Ryan. I'm joined as always by Sirit Zoe. What's up, Sirit?
Chris, how's it going?
We finished the first act of the conference semifinals or the second round. Do you prefer second round or conference semifinals? I feel like some of these playoff series deserve to be called conference semifinals.
Well, Heat Sixers is the second round.
Yeah.
Mavericks Suns is the second round.
Do you think if they called it the conference semifinals, Miami fans would show up before halftime? Or
I think maybe they'd show up for a series that had a little bit more, you know, competitive.
Yes, I set you up for that one. Yeah. I kind of wanted to talk today a little bit about what is making two of these series definitively more electric than the other two, because I think Memphis Golden State has the trappings. I mean, it already is, I think, in the incredibly online NBA Twitter brain, a classic.
Which was also, by the way, a two-game thing, because they played kind of like at the end of the season as well.
Yes.
So they've had a mini-series before.
First of all, it's got bad feelings. It's got like this Dylan Brooks suspension over the Gary Payton foul. It's got Draymond narrating the entire series. It's got like the, like, when is Klay going to be Klay? It's when is Steph going to find his shot again? Should they just build the entire universe around Jordan Poole? And then on the flip side, it's like, how far can Ja go? And that, I think, also like crowds play a part in that. You know, I was making a joke about the Miami fans, but like the Memphis crowd is like,
they're six men.
It's like the Cameron crazies with more of a drinking problem. It's like a college basketball crowd that actually is like, no, we have cars and we have like a little bit of money to spend, so we're
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, obviously I think Boston, Milwaukee so far has been like huge heavyweight punches within the series itself, even though the games, each one was like a little lopsided, but neither team was like fully bent the knee in those games. Like they were still competitive. Like even when Milwaukee was getting trucked in game two, like they still were like, well, we're not taking Giannis out. Like we're not going to pretend like this is over. And then those other two series, I mean, it's like Phoenix just might be better than Dallas. And sometimes you get those, right? And then we can talk about Miami and Philly. But I kind of wanted to see what you thought. Like, why do you think there are some series that just seem touched and others that seem forgotten?
I think it's just a competitive difference. Like that Heat Sixers series, actually, like I think that would have been a classic if Embiid had played. But without him, you know, the Sixers just look a little bit overmatched. And they seem to just not really believe that they should be winning these games, honestly. Like, they don't have enough without Embiid. And I think, like, with the Mavericks, it's the exact same thing. Like, we can kind of go down the line and talked about all the things that they could do differently, which, you know, they could, but at the same time, like, they've run into an absolute juggernaut. Like, the Suns won 64 games. They're the number one seed, and the Mavericks, you know, they're improving. And I think we probably,
in the right direction. Yeah.
I think we probably overrated them in the regular season because of how successful they were post trade. But going back and looking at that trade, their defense actually dropped quite a bit after they traded Porzingis. And like, I think that's probably a major factor in what is ailing them at this particular moment. And it's also, man, like, just on a purely aesthetic level, it's a boring series. I think I would be a little bit, like, more pissed off if it was more competitive, because then I'd actually have to, like, really dig into it and pay attention to every single, like, 24-second long possession that both right. these teams play. Luckily, the Suns are good enough that at least isn't what's happening.
That's, like, my main complaint, I think. It has nothing to do with, like, old-school basketball versus, like, Moneyball nerds. It's really just, like, if the entire offense is drive and kick, and sometimes this happens with Boston and sometimes this happens with teams that are like obviously playing really well, but if the entire offense is just drive and kick and like passing up like barely contested like cool layups for a corner three with a guy who shoots 32%, because maybe if he hits it, it's got more value. Like, that just starts to become like almost watching people play pop a shot. I think that, you know, we were going to talk a little bit about whether teams are like learning the wrong lessons, you know, going into these playoffs or coming out of these playoffs, and whether like we're starting to see some bad habits develop in some teams. And I think Dallas might have a little bit of that, even though they're like a great success story and Luka is Luka, and like they really like figured their season out, and like it seems like Kidd has like a really good direction, like a really good momentum with this team. Like, I do wonder a little bit whether that's happening with Dallas.
I'm personally just very pissed off about the, like, the turn that Luka has made from Luka Magic to Luka Math. I don't like it at all. It's become impossible to deny. Like, everyone has been making like Harden comparison pretty much since he got into the league, but I've always been kind of against it because he has this like flourish and imaginativeness to his game.
Just so everybody, the title of this podcast is Luka being Harden-pilled? Yeah.
He's absolutely being Harden-pilled. I think that's a perfect way to put it. It's kind of like been creeping up on us pretty much since his rookie year. In his second year, he obviously went and like, you know, his usage numbers went sky high because it was like, oh yeah, we know now that like he's automatically already a star. But if I went back and dug into Dallas's offense, and the best offense they ever had was in his second year. And it was also when his usage rate was still quite high, but it was its lowest, and all of those usage numbers have been creeping up pretty much like since then. And then now, if you look at this year's playoffs, like out of everybody that's in the top five in field goal attempts, he's the only one left in the playoffs. He's averaging 4.8 turnovers.
And we talked about this a little while ago about heliocentric offenses, right? Like about people who are basically the weather system of their offense. And everything is revolving around them, and everything has to come from them and could continue. But like, this is interesting because like when we talked about it before, I feel like it was like, isn't this cool? And now it's like, are we sure this is good? Yeah.
Yeah, that is the context we put it in. And I think one thing that I've been saying like pretty much like throughout the entire MVP debate is that you don't really want to be the MVP.
Right.
Like, that's not good for your playoff chances. And yeah, like this is like he leads the playoffs in usage percentage. He accounts for 37% of their field goals and 44% of their assists and 50% of their turnovers when they're on the floor. Like, it's just, it's way too much to put on one player. And the thing that is like kind of strange about it to me is that I think this is probably what they were trying to get away from with the trade with Spencer Dinwiddie. But in the playoffs, they've just kind of gotten back to it whenever he's on the floor. Like, there's like this two versions of Dallas where he plays and then when he doesn't play. And they kind of, it's not like the Luka-less Dallas team is like, you know, whipping the ball all over the floor. You know, Spencer and Jalen Brunson are kind of like, they're two like pick and roll ISO players. Like, they like having the ball in their hands. And there's definitely something to building a team that way. Like, we've talked about it with the Suns, we've talked about it with the Warriors. Like, the guys that aren't your star should probably still have some stylistic similarities to your star so that they can fit in the system that you built around him.
Right.
But I also think that we're kind of starting to see the negative of that with Dallas, because like comparing the Suns and the Mavericks, what the Mavericks lack is versatility in what they can do once that stops working. And I think it's going to be really interesting come like, you know, offseason time when you figure out how much money you want to pay Jalen Brunson. Because, like, to me, the biggest difference between those teams is just the fact that, like, Luka doesn't have an actual genuine second star to play with. Because the Suns play in a very similar way.
So this is really fascinating. I don't want to get super sidetracked by this because I do want to move through these other series, but I was thinking about this Jalen Brunson thing too, because I saw on my Bible, hoopshype.com/rumors.
It's actually one of the better Bibles.
It's really up there with some of the testaments. But there was a rumor about, like, Jalen loves the vibes in Dallas, and that now the needle is sort of more pointing towards him staying in Dallas rather than going to, like, the Knicks or the Pacers or something like that. And I agree with you. Like, on one hand, Dallas has had historically one of the funniest, like, slipping on a banana peel kind of free agency plans where they're like, we've cleared out all these cap space. And then, like, DeAndre Jordan hostage situation and, like, going for Dwight and, like, never getting the marquee free agent that they want. But your point is really well taken. Do they need somebody who is essentially, like, an alpha B next to Doncic? Because right now, Brunson and Dinwiddie are, like, very, very capable. They were capable of winning, winning some games in the first round without Luka. But when Luka's not in the game, are those two guys enough to keep it going? The flip side of what you're saying, though, is this. There are lots of teams. I think we saw this to some extent with the end of Durant and Westbrook in Oklahoma. And I certainly saw it a lot with Philly with Embiid and Simmons, where it's like you can't actually build two full teams. So unless those stars are kind of facsimiles for one another, like, this is what you're saying. It's like you can't have, like, Ben Simmons and four shooters and Joel Embiid and four shooters, but then sometimes play them all together. You know, like you, and so this is really, like, it's been wild watching Dallas, where you're like, God, this is so intoxicating in the regular season. And they had some really amazing clutch wins coming down the stretch too. But there's something about, like, Phoenix is just kind of like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? They've run into this systemic team, and it's like, Aiden's in foul trouble, here comes JaVale. JaVale gets in foul trouble, here comes Biombo. Like, they just seem to have Mikal Bridges out, Cam Johnson in. Like, there's these body types, there's these play style types. It's just, it's been a really interesting contrast in team building.
Yeah, there's, like, with the Suns, Booker and Paul are different enough that if what Paul is trying to do isn't working, like, you take away, or he's just not hitting that short mid-range jumper in pick and roll in the fourth quarter, you can go to other things. Like, the way that Booker gets his points, like, he can get his points that way. Like, everybody on that team has pretty much just been like, oh, so that's how you stake a pick and roll, cool, like, we'll start doing that too. But at the same time, like, you can get him moving off a screen, and the types of defenders that he thrives against, like, we're going to talk about Gary Payton later, but that's a perfect example. Gary Payton's a great Devin Booker defender, not a great Chris Paul defender. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, Chris Paul is probably the one guy in the NBA that, you know, like, just, like, will pull one over on a guy like Gary Payton, right? Just because that's what Chris Paul does against aggressive defenders. But being able to have that and have that work within the same system, but have, like, some subtle differences so that you can adjust. And it's so, like, it's, I'm not saying that, like, I'm not even trying to blame Dallas for, like, cause this is hard.
Yeah.
Like, the Suns keyed into something, laid the groundwork for this, like, with that Mikal Bridges Ayton draft. And then they got Chris Paul, and Devin Booker ended up being like it's going to end up being like a Hall of Famer. You know, that's hard. That's very hard. But I also think that the Mavericks aren't actually ridiculously far away from that either. If you look at this upcoming offseason, we have to get into this part too much. Like, I'm down to do like an offseason exploration on them, like, when that time comes. But we used to compare Devin Booker and Zach LaVine before Devin Booker got into a winning situation. And Brad Beal are two of, like, probably going to be like the major guys that are potentially available, right?
Right.
And they would fit perfectly, I think, into a system that the Mavericks have that could, you know, potentially, you probably have to lose one of Spencer or Jalen in those situations. But they have a lot of sign and trade possibilities. That's, like, kind of the beauty of the KP trade, is it gave them guys that are actually movable. But one of those guys, whether it's Spencer or Brunson, like, can then fit into a more natural tertiary role that would allow them to thrive in the way that, like, a guy like Mikal Bridges is pretty much just hitting, like, every, like, semi-contested or open shot that he gets, because he's attacking on all this, you know, on these closeouts, essentially. Like, he's not doing too much of his own work.
Yeah.
You know? So they're close, and they're very similar teams. It makes for a kind of a boring series, because, like, you know, they're both very methodical, but at the end of the game, it's like Luka's gassed and the Suns can just target him over and over again. But for the Suns, it's like Paul and Booker have fresh legs.
And they can stagger. And I mean, Luka missed time during the regular season for sure. And he's coming off that calf injury, but Dallas is not doing as good of a job wearing out anybody on Phoenix, because it's like, who do you try to wear out? You know what I mean?
They're so deep as well. Yeah. And like, you know, you brought up the Ayton point before, like, the guys that they bring in also just fit exactly into the role that the other guy was playing. It's like you take Mikal Bridges out and you put Cam Johnson in.
Right.
You're not changing a lot when you do that.
The playoffs are heating up and you can make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay each week. You'll get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel has so many ways to play, and best of all, when you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. So my same-game parlay for Saturday, let's do Saturday. Obviously, Golden State versus Memphis is going to be the eyes of the nation upon that one. And I think it's probably just because I want this to happen for him. I'm going to take a same game parlay that takes the Warriors with the spread. So that's -7. Klay Thompson over 21.5 points, and Klay Thompson 4+ made threes. I just feel like home cooking is really going to come in handy for Klay back in the Bay. And I see a bounce back game for him, and I see a victory for the Warriors. That was a very emotionally draining victory for Memphis. And I feel like they're going to probably want to make sure they get out of Golden State with a win, but maybe not Game 3. If you're new to FanDuel, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code RINGERNBA. Once again, that's promo code RINGERNBA. And if you already have an account, you're all set to bet. No sweat. Either way, you'll get up to $20 in free bets if your same game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. FanDuel Sportsbook is an official partner of the NBA. 21 and older in select states. Refund issued as non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problems? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 at visitccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in New York. Tennessee Red Line is 1-800-889-9789. 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming or visit www.1800gambler.net in West Virginia. Well, let's talk a little bit about Memphis, because I think that it's fair to say that Game 3 of Memphis Golden State is one of the great all-time, like, I don't have Saturday plans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is, like, across America, people being like, you know what, can we actually move this? There's no Saturday plans around this. This thing has become, like, instant must-see TV. What happens sometimes with playoff series is, like, the game happens, and then you can feel it deflate over the course of, like, the days off. And with the Golden State-Memphis series, because of the Brooks suspension and the Peyton injury and everything else, it just gets like more and more tense. And so now it's like Kerr has already said he expects like the most intense Golden State crowd he's ever heard. And there was something about like, oh, like I can't remember which Giants player, but I think Buster Posey is having like his number retired or something down like at the Giants stadium that day. So it's kind of like this day long San Francisco sports day. To say that he expects the most intense Warriors crowd ever is saying quite a bit. Warriors crowds can get into it. So, like, you have this, like, welcome to hell atmosphere coming in. You know, Brooks won't be there, but, like, Memphis will hear it from the Warriors fans. And it's going to be, I don't know, I want to say bloodbath, but I think metaphorically a bloodbath. You know, figuratively, it'll be a bloodbath, even if it's not. What's making this series so great?
I think it's the stylistic differences and the fact that both teams are really physical and really talented and both know what they're doing, too. They're both really smart. And I think there's just like this, we have been leading up to this moment for a while. We've basically been leading up to it since Dylan Brooks got really mad that Andre Iguodala didn't want to report to camp for the Grizzlies after being traded to them, which is a completely justifiable move on the part of Andre Iguodala. But there's also this weird element happening, I think, where the Grizzlies don't stylistically resemble the Warriors of 2015, but I think on a spiritual level, there is a similarity there, where they are this young team that just kind of came out of nowhere. They play differently than most of the NBA. They actually play against a lot of the tenets that we now consider to be like self-evident, right?
Right.
They've started Steven Adams for most of the season. That's pretty much probably going to be done for the rest of the playoffs. I'm curious to see if we see him in the Warriors series. I think we could. They were the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA, or like, or top two or three at least. I can't remember now. And they just assaulted the paint, whether it was, you know, Jaren and Adams and Clark and Tillman, and or just obviously Ja just leading the NBA in points in the paint while being like a skinny 6'1 guy. They have the Warriors' arrogance.
They do.
They have that thing, and they piss other teams off. They've been acting in ways that I think just piss veterans off, and they've been getting away with it too. We've talked about this before with like Desmond Bane and LeBron, and you know, like Brooks getting it into it with Booker, and now you've got them getting it into it with the Warriors, who they had those two play-in games against. And I think the Warriors, like, they obviously really want to win any series, but I think they really want to beat the Grizzlies, and I think they have really wanted to beat the Grizzlies, but they haven't really been able to, like, they haven't been able to punk them, essentially.
Certainly
and
not.
Usually when you piss the Warriors off like that, you get punked, and we might see that in game three. Like, we don't really know what's going to happen, and that's what makes it so exciting, because on the other end of it, I'm like, okay, yeah, we could see that. We could see the Warriors go, like, we'll get, like, let's get into the starting lineups a little bit, because they're going to have to change them up. We could see them go, like, starting up the pool party lineup, right? And just trying to outshoot the Grizzlies and, like, getting off to, like, a 30-10 start, and then that's the game.
Right.
We could also see, like, Otto Porter in the starting lineup. He's been awesome for their rebounding. And then the series, all the things that I mentioned have all flipped. Like, the Warriors are the team that's offensive rebounding. The Warriors are the team that's dominating the paint. And the Grizzlies are the team that's shooting well from three, which is just strange. And I think part of that is just the short break. I'm really curious to see how different everything looks now that both teams have had these 3 days off to be able to actually scout each other. The Warriors probably had a little bit more time, but they're probably waiting to see if it was, like, the Wolves or the Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies just had no time at all. So I'm very curious to see how different things look and if, like, these teams can kind of get back to, like, what they are actually good at. But it also speaks to the fact that, like, they know each other and they know how to take away the things that the other side is good at.
Right.
Which is really, like, the makings of a good series to me. So I'm really curious about what's going to happen. There's still so many unknowns, and there's just, like, there's big game players. Like, for every Steph Curry three that feels like a haymaker, that feels inevitable, like, you know, it gets the crowd going because you know you have that guy on your side. Like, Ja Morant just comes back with another layup, or just, like spinning in the lane and just embarrassing Andrew Wiggins. And then being able to do it again. Like, it is about as reliable a thing as, like, the Curry three, and, like, at least I think that's what Grizzlies fans believe, right? I was thinking about the namesake of our podcast, Allen Iverson. Like, that was the AI problem, right? Like, you can't keep doing that over and over again, usually, especially if you're Jaws size. Like, historically, that hasn't really worked. So that's, like, the thing I would look at and say, like,
but might as well take advantage of it while you can. You know?
Yeah, while he's got his legs. Like, it's pretty fun.
the sort of overall vibe of what you just said is certainly a little, like, Memphis is cosmically blessed. This team knows no fear, et cetera, et cetera. Like, board crashing, glass eating. This is all happening. And they specifically, like, seem to irritate Golden State. I agree with all of that. If you take, like, the emotion out of it, is there a little bit, like, it's not really possible for the Warriors to shoot that badly from three again? And if Klay Thompson makes two more and Steph makes two more, this is actually 2-0 Warriors going into Golden State.
You can say that on both sides, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, hell, you could say that for the Sixers series. I mean, you know, like...
Sure.
yeah, that's right. well, you've been saying that for 6 years. Yeah.
I think it's actually, like, it's kind of perfectly put at 1-1 because when both teams say they could be 2-0, that means sure, it's probably accurate that they're 1-1, right? But it's, yeah, to your point, it's a very close series, and the Grizzlies have been making some mistakes, and, like, there's kind of two ways to look at it. Some of those mistakes are mistakes of inexperience, which we saw a lot in the Timberwolves series. Some of it, I think, is going to be cleaned up by the fact that they've now had a bunch of days to just watch and hone in on how Golden State plays. But there's been definitely miscommunication. I think we were talking about this series kind of, like, looking at the Wolves series and saying, wow, the Grizzlies can't make these types of mistakes against an actual championship contender, because they're not like the contender is not going to make the appropriate mistakes to then, you know, balance those out. I think what we forgot is that the Warriors love making mistakes. Like, they love it. They love it. They love unnecessary turnovers. Yeah. Like, they love, like, Klay Thompson loves quick shots. Like, some of those Klay shots, like, I look at and I'm like, okay, like, they got lucky with how much of them aren't going in, for sure. It's bad shot selection, but it's also Klay Thompson. So it's like, I don't know.
Across the board, we have not seen the barrage. Like, yeah. Like, the classic Splash Brothers backbreaking barrage of threes, where even no matter whether you guard them 35 feet out, whether you think you've got it, like whether like you can, they can't possibly make that one again, and it's like it just keeps going down, and that's what has cracked people before. It's like one, like because if you look at Steph's numbers, you're like, that's a pretty good game, but they're never like the four in a row. My god, like he sucked the life out of the arena, like knife to the heart. Threes.
He missed a couple that would have made like maybe like three consecutive threes that could have done that.
You can even see, you can see when you watch him, you're like, he knows that's not happening. Like he had that bank in from the top of the key and he was just like, fuck.
Yeah, like it wasn't really, yeah. It's strange. I think it reminds me a lot of that Thunder series that they played in 2016 where he just, you know, he just wasn't able to get to that place. And I think the Thunder defense really bothered him. I think it might be a similar scenario where the Grizzlies just, they switch everything and they're really physical.
Yeah.
Or they have somebody like Bane coming off the screen who is just like, you can't really screen him. He's just that good coming off of them. Other than that, they're mostly switching and they're really physical. And, you know, for the most part, I think like Clark has done a really great job on those switches. And I think Jaren Jackson, when he's not fouling, has always done a pretty good job on Curry. I think it might take the pool party lineup to have that level of explosion against his defense.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like, who do you think starts? Do you think they just go with the pool lineup instead of Peyton for game three?
I don't know. That's the other thing that's so enticing about this, right? Like they have a stylistic decision to make.
Yeah.
Because that lineup will give up offensive rebounds. It will give up paint points. It will be, you know, Ja going in and basically just getting whatever he wants, I think, against, you know, Jordan Poole. A lot more guys to target. Puts a lot more on Andrew Wiggins.
It's really strange to watch a Warriors team, like the version of the Warriors team that sometimes they throw out there when Poole's not on the floor. It's strange to feel like this is a team that teams can sag off of. You know, like, because, like, they were basically daring Wiggins to beat them, and he didn't.
Yeah. And I think those shots, also, they got a little bit lucky on, too. Mm-hmm. The reason I, like, now that I think about it, that I don't like it, at least as a starting lineup, is that I think the Warriors win this series if they keep this, like, configuration of Desmond Bane's not getting into this game, and Dylan Brooks is suspended, and you can't really do much about Jaren Jackson if he doesn't have foul trouble. Like, I can't really rely on him to do that consistently for a series, but one or two of these games, for sure. I like the idea of we're going to make Ja beat us, because it might not really work in their favor early in this series, but by the time game 6 or 7 rolls around, I think Ja's going to have some tired legs. And I think the worst thing in the world for the Warriors right now would be if they went with an offense first starting lineup and all of a sudden everybody else starts going off. And Ja, like, they get away with winning a game where, like, Ja doesn't have to shoot 25 times.
That version of Memphis, I mean, going back to what we were saying about Dallas and, like, the regular season versus the playoffs, and, like, we haven't really had to see the version of Memphis that they managed to, like, stay afloat, not even stay afloat, but, like, speedboat while Ja was out. You know what I mean? And this sort of, like, elite team during the regular season, during the time that the Ja missed because of injury. And so now it's become almost like the end of the game, it was certainly heliocentric. Like the end of game definitely. 2 was like very much revolving around Ja. But yeah, we haven't really had to see that you have to guard us straight up because there's not this like obvious point where everything is going to evolve from our offense. It's a great series. I mean, like, that's awesome. I hope it goes 7.
I might start Otto Porter. He's been really good for them.
So you would start Otto Porter at the 5, basically? Or like,
yeah, his rebounding has just been awesome.
The thing isn't so much like personnel as much as it's like they just cannot be this sloppy again.
Yeah, but their defense is thinning out, though. Like, when you talk about their starting lineup, it's like, man, like, no Iguodala.
No Peyton.
Yeah, like, you're going to start having to go into, like, the Damian Lee well. Might have to start, like, you know, seeing what Kuminga looks like in the playoffs.
Well, I was going to ask. I'm not, like, the world's greatest Warriors expert, but, like, I was really enjoying Moody down the strip, like, the second half of the season. Like, is Moody just out of the question for some reason?
I think so. It seems like it. I think if they go to anybody, they would go to Kuminga right now. And I don't think that's a bad proposition at all.
He looked good in game two, I thought. So the Philly-Miami series is sad for me. We're recording this at 10 on Friday morning, so it's in it, and on Friday night's game. You know, Embiid has cleared concussion protocol. There's optimism around him playing in game three. I would say that the tone of most of the Sixers group chats that I am on was, what could possibly go wrong? A lot of, like, real, like, belief.
I have to formally apologize to you, by the way.
Oh, sure. Hit me.
Yeah. Yeah. So last podcast, you know, I basically told you that you need to change your thought patterns in regards to the Sixers. You know, they won this series, and, you know, immediately go to, like, Mikal Bridges and how they never drafted him. Then immediately we just find out that Embiid is out.
I truly want to believe that this is not the sort of Eastern Conference version of Phoenix-Dallas, where it's just like they're just better than the Sixers. You know, I think that there is a competitive series in there. There was a lot of, like, make or miss league, and we just missed our shots. And if those fall, like, we're all good coming out of the Sixers. And it's just like, I know, but you guys are not exactly the Splash Brothers. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's like Danny Green and George Niang and Korkmaz and some of the people that they expect to fill it up from deep. It's not going to come from Harden, because Harden's being triple covered. So, especially without Embiid, this is not going to happen. And also Miami getting seemingly 400 second chances from Bam Adebayo, being the kid who, like, is 16 playing in the 12-year-old league, is not going to be a recipe for Sixers success. I think that they could definitely win one in Philly. I would imagine if Embiid is playing on Friday, my prediction would be that this is the night to do it. But do you see a path to victory for Philadelphia, even with an 80% Embiid?
Yeah, absolutely. Their expected shot quality is actually pretty high.
I love to hear about this. Expected shot quality is the blanket under which I sleep.
So yeah, if you want to be optimistic about it, there's definitely evidence. But, like, to me, the bottom line is just that once you now have Joel Embiid in the series, like, it completely changes everything. Like, even just the fact that he's there, because the Sixers have had just, like, no answer in terms of, like, a front court replacement for him. The fact that he can just sheerly stand there and play minutes makes a huge difference for them. Like, it just, all these questions that were asked, like, it takes a lot of heat off of Doc Rivers, so having to find a way to be creative about this stuff, because that just wasn't really feeling good. I'm glad that we're not going to get these DeAndre Jordan minutes anymore. I think, frankly, DeAndre Jordan is probably happy that he's not going to be getting these minutes anymore. And then it just becomes a situation where it's like, well, the Heat won their first two games at home. They did what they're supposed to do.
Sure.
And, like, that, yeah, that digs Philly into a bit of a hole, but, like, we're talking about, you know, a guy who had, like, you know, I think a top three usage in the regular season that they just lost. Like, plugging him back in, he's an impossible matchup. On the Heat side, Bam and Deadman are probably two of the better guys that you want to have in the league defending Embiid, especially if he's hurt. And then, like, that Miami defense, like, if they need to double, which, I mean, they probably will, they'll probably find a way to do it the right way. It's still an uphill battle for them, no question, but they now have the best player in the series if he plays. And that changes everything. And they have two home games. That's the other thing.
The doubling
two home
of Embiid. You mentioned there was, like, I think a feeling when it was announced that Embiid would miss the first two games of the series, that this was the point where, like, Harden had to, like, earn his sort of keep and be like, okay, now Harden, you turn this team into the Rockets and score 35 and have 14 assists and everything is orchestrated through you. And the Heat basically triple covered him at times. And so I think that if Embiid does come back and does draw that kind of double team attention, now is the time that I would actually be like, Harden, now score 35 points. Like, if you had a 35 point game in you, tonight is the night to do it.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. Like, what we were talking about earlier about players that fit together but are also different.
Yeah.
That is something that hypothetically the Sixers should be able to do well with Harden and Embiid. Like, both slower paced, thrive in isolation, but they figure out their pick and roll style, like, they will also be able to coexist well. And that is, like, that is a dream, right? Like, that is a dream.
That is the dream.
Of like, the Harden Embiid pairing. Game three in the playoffs is a hard time to, like, you know, hope that it all comes together. But it's such a big W having him back. It changes the tenor of the series completely, right? Like, I think before these first two games, we were talking about this being a 7-game series that like no one really knew what would happen.
Right.
I'm not completely back in that place yet, but I'm definitely more enticed.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. There are so many excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, who the heck is Arby? I don't feel like a sandwich right now. Or how many times do I have to tell you? I'm vegan! Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Don't miss the premiere of your new wireless savings with Visible. It's time to switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. That's no hidden fees. No, really. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Let's wrap up by talking about this Boston-Milwaukee series, which continues Saturday, 12:30 Pacific. I like to prioritize the Pacific time when I'm announcing times. This is bare-knuckle. I'm not sure what the state of Marcus Smart is. That was like a really weird like Ewing theory situation in game two where like they lose the defensive player of the year and play better defense.
I have no comment on that.
On the defensive player of the year part or about them playing better defense? Are you just concerned about your employment status?
It's just not the conversation I want to get into today.
Okay, you're protected. Don't worry about it. Like we've got your back. This is we are allowed to criticize the Celtics if we want to.
Are we
allowed
to?
Like yes,
yes, yes, yes. Everyone listening, we are allowed to criticize. We don't have to talk about the defensive player of the year debate. That's like four conversations ago. You know?
I understand that one probably less than I understand MVP. So let's talk about this series though, which. I think whenever you get definitive victories in each game going in the different direction, mm-hmm. you know, for one team wins decidedly, one team wins decidedly, it really has that feel of this will be long. This is going to get weird. There's going to be when they get close. I still want to see the Celtics and the Bucks play like an intensely close game, mm-hmm. right? Like what are your initial thoughts on these first two games that we saw in Boston?
I think it makes complete sense that these games would be so lopsided because I think the Bucks' whole thing is just like miss shot. You like we make you miss shots and then we run.
Right.
And it can kind of put them in this either a positive feedback loop, which was what happened in game one where Boston is missing shots and the Bucks defense, like I think from like the 6-minute mark of that game, pretty much just turned it on and decided that, hey, oh yeah, we do actually have to defend this team. And then from there, it was like, we're going to just pummel you, right? And then game two was the exact opposite of that, where you have them hitting their shots, you have Jaylen Brown just hitting like contested threes, and then from there, like, you know, the Bucks are taking the ball out of the rim and they're playing. I think it's more dramatic in this series because then they're going up against the Celtics half court defense, which nobody wants to do. Like, that is a formula right. for disaster for anybody, let alone like a Bucks team that doesn't have Chris Middleton. It reminded me of the piece Rob Mahoney wrote for The Ringer last year on Chris Middleton basically being like a cheat code for the Bucks, like the mid-range king that, you know, the exact type of shot that they kind of allow you to take because it is so available in the playoffs. He kind of can emerge as somebody who breaks other defenses. And that mm-hmm. is something that they've definitely, like, they're going to miss at in this series because the best way to beat the Celtics is actually just to hit tough shots. Unless you have Giannis. Then you can potentially try to barrel through them, right? It's a version of what is going on with the Grizzlies and Ja, except that Giannis is 6'11", so it might be a little bit more sustainable, and I worry about it less.
I feel like Giannis is entering like the Shaq zone of, like, I guess you could call that a foul if you wanted to.
But like every time, yeah.
Is it at all stoppable? No.
Yeah.
You know, like, so basically, he's unstoppable unless legislated against.
Yeah, unless you're Grant Williams.
What does Grant Williams do that no one else does, though?
Man, like, I don't think it's a thing that nobody else does, right? I think on some level, it is the fact that, you know, Grant Williams, up until this point, has spent so much time, like, in his first few years in the league, being in foul trouble that he wasn't going to get an assignment like Giannis. So Giannis is dealing with him for the first time, too. And I think if you look at his progressive numbers, like, let's say against Horford even, right? Like, he finds a way to figure out a guy like Horford, right? And I think as the series progresses, he'll figure out more against Grant Williams. But in that game, too, like, Grant Williams is really strong. He's really smart. And he moves his feet really well. And he was actually one of the players that I profiled in that Draymond Generation piece I did a while back. And he's been doing this since high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he has been, like, this 6'7 guy with, like, a 6'9 wingspan. So pretty much, like, it's not like he has a huge wingspan advantage, who is just able to read angles really well, like, pays attention to the scouting report, watches film, and watches tendencies, and actually kind of, like, plays defense in a way that tries to dictate what you do as opposed to reacting, which is very Draymond-esque. But, you know, he did this against Bam Adebayo, mm-hmm. who was, like, Dwight Howard in high school. He did it against Harry Giles, who was also, like, you know, like, if not for the injuries and all the stuff that happened to him, like, he's a guy we could be talking about a lot right now. Like, he's a really good defender, and he's been guarding guys like, sure, Giannis and being overmatched against him for a long time. And it seems like he really enjoys it, too. Like, he'll kind of just nod and be like, hell yeah, like, after it. And he just talks a lot, and he's a good communicator on defense. And, like, he's not really afraid to get into Jalen and Jason and stuff either.
He definitely makes up for the energy and, I don't know if I would say charisma, but, like, the attitude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gap that might have been there in Smart's absence. You know what I mean? Like, there is, like, a pugnacious element to, like, how he plays that I think Jalen and Jason definitely have become. I mean, Jalen was already a really formidable defender.
Yeah.
Now
Tatum, he's, like, better, like, than Jalen now.
He's so good at defense. But I don't think of those dudes as, like, bulldogs. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that I think of Smart and now kind of Williams in that way. Like, I don't feel like there's not, like, they don't play defense almost, like, emotionally. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's good not to actually get carried away. I mean, this is what happens with, mm-hmm, Dylan Brooks and Draymond Green and Marcus Smart, is that, like, they play on an edge and sometimes fall off. But I think it's been good for Boston to have some replacement for Smart being out.
Yeah, for sure. He has a very similar, I think Grant Williams and Time Lord on the floor together have, like, a very similar relationship to, like, Jaren Jackson and Xavier Tillman, or Jaren Jackson and Brandon Clark, too, where, like, there's just a lot of versatility when those guys play together and they can make up for each other's mistakes and both communicate really well. And it, like, it allows them to just be, like, this Swiss Army knife down low where you can just throw multiple different looks at Giannis depending on what type of night he's having, too. So I think that's something we could see down the line in the series as well, where you kind of, like, you know, as if you're Udoka, you're kind of looking at, like, okay, what kind of night is Giannis having? Is he, like, is he hitting the midi a lot? Okay, like, it might be a Horford Time Lord night, or is he going to try to barrel his way to the paint? Then it's going to be a Grant Williams type of night. That's, like, the challenge with Boston, right? Or, like, you know, I think we might even see some Tatum as well, right? That's kind of the challenge that, yeah, you face with Boston. I just look at Boston's offense from Game 2 and, like, the clear difference between Game 1 and Game 2, and, like, there's tactical stuff that they definitely did differently. I think they were attacking the middle a lot more, but it's kind of shaping up to be a classic Bucks series where I'm not really necessarily sure that they will adjust to that stuff as much as they will just go into the next game being like, yeah, I don't know if Jaylen Brown's going to hit contested threes on the road in, like, a pivotal Game 3 or Game 4 in the playoffs. Like, I don't know if I have all that amount of faith. So as long as, you know, the math works out, we should be pretty good. I know you love and hate shot quality.
No, I like it. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I love shot quality.
Yeah. sure. The Celtics have the worst shot quality of any team left in the playoffs.
Really?
And yeah. Yeah, according to shotquality.com.
It's a very handily named website.
It is, yeah. And, you know, the second spectrum numbers are a little bit different, but they mostly kind of hold that up. And they've been shooting above their heads more than any team except for the Suns. And they are also dead last in the playoffs in points that they get in the paint. 22%. That's really bad. And if I'm the Bucks, I'm looking at like the game plan that I have, where that's exactly what the Bucks try to do, right? I don't know. I'm kind of just riding this out.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like weirdly, it's easier to analyze the Warriors-Memphis series when it's like this frenetic and close, and because you can say like if this happens, then this, and if this happens, then that. Whereas like with the Bucks-Celtics series, the fighters have gone back to their corners, and I have no idea how they're going to come back out in the next round.
Yeah.
I don't really know what Boston's going to look like in Milwaukee. Like, that's, you know, I think that they've had the benefit a little bit of having the home court throughout this, mm-hmm. the series, the playoffs so far. Obviously, that would end if Miami and Boston advance, but it's been fascinating to kind of like watch Boston have to like take a punch in that first game and come back. So it's I was really impressed with them in the second game, but yeah, it'll be like amazing to see them on the road, maybe some slightly more like hostile reception, mm-hmm. and I think that counts for something.
Like these game one versus two swings, right? Like you almost have to recalibrate, because watching that game two, it was like, okay, the Celtics are back, and then a couple of days pass and you're like, wait, the Bucks got home, like they still won.
Yeah.
They did their job.
Like, exactly. You know? All those teams that were like, we split, so we're good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's more like Dallas and Philly who should be like a little bit nervous. A lot of basketball this weekend. We'll be back next week. Thanks to Chris Sutton for producing us. Everybody, we have got like The Void is tonight. Waz is on the weekend. Ryan and Bill will go Sunday night. So there's tons of Ringer NBA podcasts to listen to. Sarah, you did a Spotify Live earlier this week, right?
I did with Logan. We were previewing the boring series.
We're trying to hop on and do those like kind of pre-games. If you're kind of paying attention, you'll see on Twitter, or you'll get a notification that we're doing these pre-games. Mm-hmm. So
pop by, ask us questions, troll us,
talk about shot value. Thanks again to Chris for producing. We'll talk to you guys next week.